This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday, January 27th edition of Invest Talk. And today I have the Wednesday.
Today's Wednesday. It's hump day.
By the way, that's Justin. Justin Klein joined me today.
Good to be here.
So Justin and I are with you. We're here to talk about your money. We need your input to help us serve you, to stay on track on what your needs and your interests are, not what we are. Justin and I can talk about this stuff all day long, which we do, by the way. But it may not be something that's of interest to you. So you drive the show with your calls. 888-99-CHARTER is how you can reach us this hour. Or you can do that same number. You can reach us anytime. Any question or comment, as long as it's financial, is welcome. And don't be afraid if you think it's a too simple question. There's no such thing. Now, U.S. stocks recorded their biggest decline in 3 weeks yesterday. Did you see that? Today they had another big decline. It was right at the end of the day, though. When did it start really falling?
Really after the Fed. You know, you had the good earnings from Apple yesterday, and that brought the market higher in the morning. But it really faded pretty quickly and kind of hung around the flatline area for most of the day until the Fed came out. And then once the Fed came out, you had some gyrations, and boom, the last about hour, 2 hours of the day were pretty rocky.
And the Fed, everybody, you know, they didn't, because they had their meeting, the statement wasn't that surprising, other than they kind of hinted that the economy is doing pretty well, and that tells us they're on track of what they've said before about raising rates sometime later this year. The market doesn't like raising rates, doesn't like that idea.
No.
So I think that's what really drove that last hour.
I wonder, I'm still a little surprised they're not talking about the dollar yet.
Yeah, they haven't mentioned the strength of the dollar.
Yeah.
Compared to every other currency out there. And every other currency, I was going to talk about that a little bit, about QEs in Europe and what it's doing. So we'll get to that later on the show.
Yeah.
But they never bring it up.
Yeah, it's having a lot of ramifications around the world, not just in the oil industry, but when it comes to corporate profits, and it's just causing a lot of issues. And you know, when does it cause too many issues? The big question.
And since Justin brought up oil, that is good. The topic of our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference coming up a week from this Saturday, February 7th in San Jose. The emphasis will be on what are the positive sides of this lower oil prices. We're going to talk about the negative effects as well, but what we're really trying to focus on is maybe this will be an opportunity down the road, or maybe it's an opportunity right now. What do you think? But we're going to discuss it. That's going to be the topic of our conference, so I'm hoping you'll be here. We're going to talk about... I'm sorry? So how are you doing on your savings goal, by the way? Of course, our success depends greatly on what age we started seriously saving for retirement. If you're the average person, you started when you were about 30. Wells Fargo Gallup completed a poll last year on this very question. There will be some interesting numbers. 26% of investors in the U.S. report that they started saving for the retirement before they turned 25. 26%, that's surprisingly
high
for me. 7% who started started before they were 20.
Would that be you?
No, I don't think so.
What was your age?
My first investment was 21, I will say that. So I guess. But I didn't think of it as saving for my retirement.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't like a 401k or an IRA. It was just investing to try to make money. You know, but obviously, if you start saving for retirement in your 20s, you're setting yourself up to be pretty well off by the time you retire. Compounding really does great wonders over years. But here's the most important point, I think. About 69% believe they could save more if they tried. The median additional estimated savings amount among this group is about $250 per month. They could save more. They could, if they tried, they could save about $250 a month. Only about 25% of those who were included in this poll said that they really could not save any more than they can right now.
Meaning 75% said they could save, they should have saved more. They could have saved more than they actually did.
They should have.
Yeah.
And that's one of the big problems with baby boomers, my generation. They don't have enough money for retirement. They don't. They're not even close.
Yeah.
As a group. Not even close. I think, what was it, $40,000 or $50,000, $60,000 their average 401k?
Yeah. And if you talk to most financial planners, they'll say you should save about 10 to 12% of your salary every year for your retirement in some sort of savings vehicle, whether it's 401k or an IRA, Roth IRA, some sort of retirement account. And you know, the fact is the vast majority of people aren't saving that much. And even if you are today, you probably weren't at some point in your life. And so you actually need to contribute more just to catch up, right? Yeah. Just to catch up with those years that you didn't save 10 to 12% of your income.
And a lot of 401ks, the employer matches up to a certain amount. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can imagine how many people don't take advantage of that.
Shocking.
Free money. It's time to get your voice in the mix, everybody. Some of the invest talk needs to come from you. 888-99-CHART is how you can reach us during this hour or any time with your questions or comments. Let's answer this question that came in before the start of the program today.
California. I'm 59 years old. I got $70,000 in my 401k. I was wondering, what should I do? I got a mortgage that's close to $60,000. Can you help me out? What do I need to do at this point in life? Thank you.
Well, how old was he?
I think he was 32. Is that what I heard?
Well, you know.
52.
Well, one thing you're going to need to do is
save more.
You need to start saving a lot more money quickly. And you're going to have to start paying off that mortgage. By the time you retire, you want that mortgage paid off because you don't have enough income in retirement to support it. Now, with the little bits of facts you gave me, it's really hard to give you advice.
Yeah, because how much money are you saving a month? Now, there's five factors generally that you have to hone in on to figure out, am I going to have enough money to retire? A is how much money do you have now, right? That's the starting point. Then it's how much money are you saving a month or per year? And then when are you going to retire? When do you plan to retire? And then how much do you think you're going to need every month in retirement, you know, after you get your Social Security and any pensions you might have? And then from there, you figure out risk tolerance. How much risk are you willing to take? And then you have those five factors, and then you can say, okay, I'm in a good situation or I'm not in a good situation. That's what we do with our clients. And, you know, he gave us about two bits of information.
Yeah, we need a little bit more information. If you really want some help, I'll be able to help you. Go to our website on the front page at the bottom. There's a blue box called...
There's the risk profile, risk questionnaire that you can fill out. Or just send an email straight to Steve. Say, contact Steve, and that'll go straight to his email box, and he can send you that.
Yeah, we'll start gathering information, and I'll help you. No obligation. I'll help you try to reach a comfortable retirement. It's kind of important.
That's everyone's goal, right? That's why everyone's listening. It's why everyone's thinking about investing.
Yep. Seven myths that could trip you up in your IRA contributions. We're going to talk about that. It's going to be one of our main talking points today. I also want to talk about the Fed statement a little bit today. We mentioned at the top of the show, but I want to talk about it a little bit more. Bear market signals. Are we seeing some bear market signals, and what are they? I have a couple ideas. I'm sure Justin will too. And will QE actually work for Europe? Will it work? What's the difference between its QE and ours? And frankly, did ours really work? I have some evidence that it really didn't. So I want to explore that just a little bit before the end of the show. And I got a couple other points that we didn't get to about, you know, the dollar and how everybody in the world is trying to push it down. If we get to that, we'll talk about that as well. Okay, right now, let's take a quick review of today's market. What happened today? Well, we told you that the market was down 193, 95 points on the Dow, 44 on the NASDAQ, 27 on the S&P. Two pretty good down days in a row. And we got 2 days left in the trading month, right, Justin?
Yeah, and the S&P is going to have to rally about 58 points over the next 2 days to avoid a down January.
And that's going to be difficult. Yeah. It's possible. We're down 27 points today, yeah. So it's not impossible. I can't say that. but I can't see any catalyst for it to do that.
Yeah, there's no real big economic news or anything like that. Maybe a Fed president can come out and say they're going to do QE4.
Yeah, that would do
that
it.
That might goose the market higher. So
McDonald's is up after hours because the CEO quit.
Yeah, and you had some earnings. We're right in the midst of earnings season.
Right.
Earnings have been coming out pretty good. You know, we had Apple earnings that was good. They were good yesterday. Then after the bell today, you had Qualcomm. That was down about 10% after hours. Facebook was, I think, down slightly after hours.
Microsoft wasn't so good the other day.
Microsoft wasn't good. You have Procter & Gamble, Caterpillar. A lot of these multinational companies are hurting because of the strong dollar. Mm-hmm. And Qualcomm is one of them. You know, Facebook doesn't really have that issue.
No.
But.
So think about that. The strong dollar is not helping our corporations, really. No. Not our international corporations, especially.
Yeah, because remember, when the dollar strengthens, it means all the other currencies are weak. So all the sales and revenue they're getting overseas, they have to take that money and bring it back into dollars. And guess what? That currency is not worth that much as much as it used to be. And now that you're getting less dollars back from overseas, and that hurts earnings.
So, yeah, and it squeezes profits. And maybe what's one of the reasons why durable goods sales were so bad in December.
Well, the stronger dollar means our goods are less competitive.
Yeah.
Globally.
Yeah. And if you're a corporation, do you really, and your profits are starting to squeeze, don't you start to cut back on your spending too?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all impactful, all of it.
Yep.
We want to hear your questions. 888-99-CHARTERS, how to reach us right now with your money topic on Invest Talk. If you'd like to read my latest market commentary, today I expand on the impact of the growing strength of the dollar, just as we've been talking about. It's posted right there on investtalk.com. And Justin Klein here with me today. Let's talk to Glenn in Georgia. How you doing, Glenn?
Doing fine, Steve. Hope y'all are doing okay tonight. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about Pilgrim's Pride, PPC.
Okay.
I'm having a little trouble understanding its decline today. Back on the 14th, they issued a statement saying that they were going to pay a special or distribute a special dividend.
Correct.
And it went ex-dividend today.
And the price fell sharply because of it. See.
Well, yeah, but here's my question.
Uh-huh.
The dividend was $5.77, and that was 15% of the price.
Mm-hmm.
And it fell 24%.
Yeah, so it was actually down about 10% today.
Yeah, and so I'm trying to understand why it might fall that much more. I mean, I might understand a percent or something like that, but
we'll explore this after the break in a minute. If you want to hold on, that's great. But we'll explore it and try to see if we can come up with an answer for you. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. If you're looking for a money management solution, please take a look at our Dynamic Growth Portfolio. Love to talk to you about it. Active management for optimum returns. You can find more about it on our website at investtalk.com.
We're glad that you downloaded our podcast today. Because of new technology like Skype and old school tech like the telephone, Steve can help a small number of our long distance podcast subscribers with an individual retirement review. And if you like, Steve can outline some of KPP Financial's investment programs too. To schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment.
888-99-CHARTERS is our number. Give us a call. We'll talk about anything financial you want to discuss. Glenn, are you still there? Did you hold on for us?
I'm still here, Steve.
Thank you. While the break was on, Justin and I were looking on two different computers trying to find some news that would represent. We're talking about, by everybody, Pilgrim's Pride, which is a producer of a chicken, okay, one of the largest in the United States. And they're a very good, solid company, been around a long time. Earnings are very strong. Even in their earnings report, Glenn, they were kind of upbeat. The news was not bad.
Yeah.
So Now, we know that it fell initially because of a huge dividend, a special dividend. We know that was the initial fall, but
yeah, which accounts for about 15% of the total price of the stock. So about 15% of the drop is that ex dividend. But then there's an extra. It went down 24-25%. So there's that 10% difference that we're trying to figure out.
And looking at the numbers, Glenn, there's nothing in the report, the earnings release, saying that we have like, oh, we think growth is slowing. It was all kind of good news. So the only theory I came up with is that maybe people who do not understand why it fell 15% because of the big dividend payout, maybe they panicked and started selling it. They thought it was heading down, and then you had panic selling, and it drove it down more.
Yeah, maybe it's computers that momentum. You know, it's had some strong momentum. It's up a lot in the past couple years. In 2012, near the end of 2012, it was trading at $4.50. Today it's at $28.05, and that's after dropping 25%.
So I think
I bought more at the end of the day, mm-hmm. and. It looks like there was a lot of buying interest back in June at $25, and so I figured if it got to there, well, I'd buy some more. So,
well, it may be work. There's nothing wrong with the numbers. I can tell you that it's not expensive stock. It's not.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Glenn. I appreciate it. 888-99-CHART 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
How you doing, Steve?
Good. Thanks
Justin?
For the call.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you a question on Social Security. How's it figured? Is it over like a 10-year period? Your highest 10 years?
I don't think it's the highest 10 years, but I can't tell you. I know it's important that you make a lot of money and try to max out your Social Security payout in the latter part of your years before you retire. But I don't know how many years. They go back.
Yeah, I think it's the total amount that you're paying into it over the life of your working life. Now, if you go to the Social Security website and you start putting in some information, they will ask you how much, because you can go there and find out how much you should get in retirement at 62 when you can first start taking Social Security, at full retirement age 67, which will be a substantial amount more, and then 70, which is when you absolutely have to start taking Social Security. But it'll ask you how much you make this year, and it'll assume you're going to make that until you retire
at 67,
yeah.
Whenever your age is.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's really all about how much you pay into it in total.
Yeah.
No. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think they just take a 10-year period. I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought there was like a simple formula you could use, but
the easiest thing. Go to the Social Security website. It's an easy form. It literally takes 2 minutes for you to figure out how much you should probably get in retirement. It's very simple.
I think it's SSA.gov, Social Security Administration, SSA.gov, and you can figure it out real quick. It's really easy.
Oh, I'll try that.
Okay, Art, thanks for the call. Yeah, it's really easy.
All right, thanks, Art.
Thank you, Art.
Okay.
It really is easy to figure out how much they're going to give you.
It's a guesstimate.
It is.
Just like anything else. No one's going to tell you exactly. And it's like I said, it's assuming you're going to make the same amount going forward, which you may not. You might get unemployed, you may make more money. Who knows?
Yep. And if you put off collecting it from 67 to 70, you get about 8% more a year. So, it might be a good idea to put it off if you don't need it necessarily.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about IRAs. Well, we don't have a lot of time, Just. We're going to have to talk.
A couple minutes.
We
can touch on them quickly.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of myths surrounding IRAs, and the number one myth is if you contribute to an IRA, you won't be able to get your money out unless you have some type of extenuating situation. Like buying a home or going back to school or things like that.
Or some health problems.
Yeah. The truth is, you can take the money out. You're penalized.
Yeah, you can take it out anytime you want. It's totally accessible, except you're going to have to pay, if it's a regular IRA, you're going to have to pay taxes and get penalty. Mm-hmm. If it's a Roth IRA, you can take it out. There's no penalty.
Yeah. Any additional gains you can take out.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, that's one. Is a Roth IRA better than a regular IRA?
Yeah, a lot of people think a Roth is always the best. Well, it depends on each person's situation. If you're in a high tax bracket now, it's probably not a good thing to be putting money in, because you are putting money in that's after tax, and you're not getting that tax deductibility like you are with a traditional IRA. And so if you're in a high tax bracket making a lot of money, well, maybe a Roth isn't the best for you. But most people, they're in kind of low tax brackets, especially if you're young, and it's the best way to go.
Yeah, the point is it's individual. Yeah. Depends on you.
Yep.
The investing scams at work will live on. They always have. Scams that just won't die come up in the next half hour. We're going to talk about those scams, especially for the elderly. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. You can do it right now on Invest Talk. Okay, let's begin this half hour answering one of our listener line questions. They come in all the time, and it's great. We really love them. Thank you for all those podcast listeners sending them to us. 888-99-CHART is how you can ask any question at any time.
Hey, Steve. This is William from San Jose. Just started listening to your show. A great show, by the way. I have a question about a stock ticket number, Walt Disney. Ticket symbol for this one is DIS. I just want to see your take on it, if it's a good time to buy right now. And if it is a good time to buy, how long would you keep it for, roughly? All right. Hope to hear from you soon. Thank you.
Well, first of all, we're talking about Walt Disney Company, and the length of time to own it is probably forever, because it's a blue chip, consistently earning, consistently growing. I can't. What's the reason to sell it? Competition. Who's their competition? Like Six Flags. I mean, they really don't have competition.
Well, they're not really a theme park.
No.
A very, very small percentage of their business is theme park. It's majority, it's merchandise.
Own Pixar.
Well, yeah, Pixar. But a big part is ABC, ESPN. That has really been driving their growth over the past 5 years or so, because the rights to sports broadcasting has just gone gangbusters, and they're the leader in that industry. So as long as that goes up, Disney will be going up. But, it's a very diversified business, which is good.
So what you want to do is you want to buy it when it's cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really – and right now it's not cheap.
No, it's not cheap. It's expensive. It is a great company. It's a company everybody should have on their watch list. If you have the wherewithal to go through a recession and a down move, all of their business is cyclical. There's nothing about their business that really is anti-cyclical. They make money on merchandising. People need money that want to buy Mickey Mouse shirts and things like that, to go to the movies, to pay for advertising. In a recession, that's the first thing that gets cut is advertising, and that's going to hurt their ESPN and ABC businesses. So it is a very cyclical business, and you saw in 2009, earnings went from $2.27 in 2008 to $1.82 in 2009, and the stock
went all the way down to $15 a share.
Yeah, exactly. It went down to $15 a share. Now it's at 92, but if you look back in 2007, it was trading at $37 a share, went down to $15 a share. So it went down 60%.
And so it doesn't mean it doesn't mean you have to wait for a recession. But it would be the ideal time to buy it.
Yeah, like you said, you don't have to wait, but you have to be willing to go through a recession. And if it goes down 50%, you still hold it. You don't freak out.
Yeah, you still hold it, and maybe think about buying some more.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so most people don't. They freak out and they sell.
Can't. Yeah.
Exactly.
Most people sell at that point and buy when it's like now.
Yeah. So it's expensive. A fantastic company. Something that everybody should own over the long term, but if you're looking to create a position and a good buy price, this probably isn't the best buying price over the long term.
Okay, the Federal Reserve came out today with their statement, and they were upbeat about the U.S. economy, and that implies by mid-year they're going to hike the interest rates, because they said they were going to do that in previous statements. So the market didn't really care for that. The market started to fall right after they said that. Market does not like rising interest rates. It does not like it. So if the economy is doing good and better than it was, and the kind of the words they used kind of hinted that it was better than it was, but still steady, then that tells the investors out there, well, they're closer and closer to raising rates, and they don't like that. Now, we're going to get our GDP for the fourth quarter out this Friday.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the jobs number next Friday.
So you've got to know that the Fed probably knows what those numbers are.
Probably.
Or has a pretty good idea what
yes.
those numbers are.
Yes.
And so when they hint that it's a little bit better economy, then I'm thinking the GDP number is probably going to come in decent. I think the estimate is for like 3% or 2.9 or something. Remember, last quarter was 5. The last quarter meaning the third quarter of 2014. This is going to be the fourth quarter. And that means that the GDP number for the overall year is about 2.2%, 2.3%.
For 2014.
The overall year, which is okay. That's not great. That's about 2 percentage points below average from a recession recovery that we had. So we really haven't done that well.
If you look at the durable goods number, that was the number for December, right?
That was disappointing.
And that was the fourth quarter, and that was disappointing. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think you'll see it's – I think maybe the first part of the Q4 was strong, but I would say probably the back half was probably pretty weak.
I would probably agree with that because even retail sales were disappointing for the Christmas season,
yeah.
the holiday seasons.
Yeah.
So that wasn't all that upbeat. So I would agree with you. December probably wasn't a very good month to add to our GDP. And so what does that mean for the beginning of this year, guys? I mean, what does it mean for January, February? What are we seeing? Well, one of the benefits of lower oil is lower gas prices, putting money back in the consumer's pocket. So it's not all bad news, even though it is affecting corporate earnings in a lot of different sectors.
Yeah.
Negatively, lower oil prices.
And if you look at what the ECRI index, which is the Economic Cycle Research Institute. They have a leading economic indicator index. And it's right now it's in negative, year over year it's in negative territory, about 5%. And that's right on the cusp of where it can go down to and not have a recession. If it continues to go down from here, you know, reaches 6-7% down year over year, you're almost assured to have some sort of a recession. So it'll be interesting to see. That comes out every week, every Friday. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes going forward, if it can rebound. And, you know, it's been steadily marching lower ever since really about latter part of last year, the September of last year. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if that can rebound.
We're just a couple of weeks away from our February 7th Saturday Morning Wealth Conference, the upside of lower oil prices at the Hyatt House in San Jose. How do you sort the opportunities? How do you determine where the opportunities are and where the traps are for low oil prices? We've been talking about it, and we've been talking about it for some time, and there's a lot of interest in it. So we hope you can join us there. We really would like you to sign up and let us know, because we've got to set aside a room. There's been a lot of interest in this, and so we may be limited in our space.
Yeah.
So really, Saturday morning, 9 to 12, February 7th, you have to sign up. If you really want to be there, because we're a little bit concerned about restricting of space.
Yeah, I mean, it's we picked this topic because, I mean, over the past 4 months, Steve, how many oil calls have we gotten?
Lot.
I mean, it seems like almost every day
every
there's
day
a call about oil.
Call.
So we know people want to hear about oil. Is there opportunity? What is the sector like? How do you think about the oil sector in general? And that's what we're going to discuss. And I think a lot of people are very interested in that, and that's why we have so many signups, all right?
Yeah. Save your seat, everybody. Please do. Go to investtalk.com.
If you have a question about the best strategy for your portfolio, since you know you own a mutual fund that invests in oil, why not try our anytime listener line? You've got access to a professional portfolio manager. Call and ask 24 hours a day, 888-99-CHART, or leave a note. Just click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Clay in San Diego. How you doing, Clay?
Pretty good, Steve. What about you and Justin?
We're doing great.
Doing great.
Quick question. High dividend paying stocks. I
yes,
know you
sir.
Guys talk about that quite a bit.
Yes, sir.
What is the difference in owning a high dividend paying stock fund and a regular stock fund that has some of the same companies that your high paying dividend stocks? wouldn't a regular stock fund that has these companies in there also pay dividends?
Yeah, if you have a regular stock fund and a high dividend paying stock fund, both will have dividend paying stocks. But one, the one that's focused on the high dividend paying stocks, will have a much larger percentage of dividend paying stocks and be focused on the dividend payers, as opposed to the other one will also have a concern about growth and other kinds of stocks not necessarily paying a dividend. So if you're really looking for income and that's your goal and you still want to have the chance to go up and grow with the market, you go for the high dividend paying fund.
Okay.
As opposed to a regular one.
I'm still trying to figure out exactly what Clay's question is, though.
Both of them have high dividend paying stocks, so what's the difference?
So are you talking about individual high dividend paying stocks versus a fund?
No, two funds. One that's high dividend paying, one that's not.
I got you. Okay.
I was listening to you, Clay. I understood what your question was.
I got you. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, are you looking for dividends? Is this a goal of yours? I mean, why are you trying to decipher between the two?
Well, the thing about it is I have a dividend-paying stock, and I have a stock, like Steve said, that doesn't focus on dividend, but it has some of the same stock funds, and I was looking at them, both of them, and I said, well, what's the difference? I see some of the same companies in my non-paying dividend stock fund as opposed of the dividend. So do I need both? But now when Steve just explained to me that the high dividend stock is focusing on that makes it much clearer for me.
Okay, good. I'm glad I answered that question. Thanks, Clay.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, Clay. Jay in Utah wants to talk about SEMO. How you doing, Jay?
How are you, Steve and Justin? This is Jerry. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Great. Thanks for taking the call. I take it both you and Justin are on the line?
Yes.
We are, yes.
Wonderful. Great. I've got a question that has to do with GAAP versus non-GAAP earnings. And Silicon Motion is it's listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and the Taiwanese company has got purchasers and does business in China and South Korea, the U.S., and Japan. And the specific question I had about Silicon Motion was the really rapid movements in price from a few days ago when earnings came out, January 27th, which was yesterday. And the stock gapped down based on earnings was my presumption. And it's not clear to me why it closed up at the end of the day's high, when what appeared to me was a miss on revenue and earnings, but I'm not sure if it's GAAP or non-GAAP earnings that are being evaluated.
And for everybody else, GAAP and non-GAAP, he's talking about general accounting principles, meaning if it's got earnings overseas, are they treating those earnings differently than earnings here in the United States? Or is the bookkeeping different? That's what you're asking about, right, Jay?
Correct, yeah, and it didn't make sense to me with such a wide fluctuation in price yesterday that's not been seen in years.
Yeah, it was quite a move. It started down, like you said, earlier in the day, and it hit a low of about $24.13 a share, closed yesterday at about $28.56 a share. So
that was at the opening, strike down, right?
Yeah, it moved down
the earnings conference call was at 8 o'clock Eastern time, pre-market.
Right.
And then immediately market opened, there was this 9%, almost 10% drop, and I didn't know which earnings people were responding to.
Yeah, well, they did beat on revenue. We know this because we own this for our managed accounts, and we've done pretty well in it, and it gave back a lot of those gains today. So between yesterday and today, it's only up. It closed 2 days ago at 26.87. Now it's at 27.06. So it's up, slightly. But they did beat on revenue. The miss was really consensus was a little bit below consensus going forward when guiding. On earnings and revenue going forward, but they still were better than consensus when it comes to their current quarter.
It's tough to. It's always Jay, it's always very difficult to know what investors are going to read into the earnings report.
Yeah.
And many times they go on what the CEO says about the future, because today's earnings report is done. Yeah. And so they're focused on what the CEO says. So, and sometimes they have to make up their mind whether they liked what he said or didn't like what he said.
Yeah, and maybe initially the guidance that was lower, the market didn't like those numbers. It didn't seem to like those numbers, but the conference call, the management can a lot of times assuage for those.
Yeah, they start to backpaddle and fill in gap.
Yeah, they explain themselves well enough to where investors stop really worrying, and that's really why it went up so much throughout the rest of the day.
So Jay, always listen to what the CEO says after he announces the earnings.
Yeah, because a lot of times it can happen the opposite effect. The earnings can be great,
Then
the CEO gets on the line in the conference call and they say some things that analysts or investors don't really like as much.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just, it's the interpretation that the market originally thought is different than what the CEO says. So, these earnings announcements, they can be very complicated. But you have to really look at the kind of the broader picture and the growth of whatever company you're looking at. And, SIMO still has some great growth prospects.
Right. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate the call. Thanks for listening. That's one of our podcasters, and we have about 80,000 of you out there, so we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah,
give us a call.
Try not to get that too tied up in the minutiae of these earnings announcements.
Yeah. Remember, you're looking at you want to look at stocks a little longer track.
And look at a broader strokes as well.
I'm portfolio manager Steve Pisa with Justin Klein today. Give us a call. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. If you'd like to know more about our 401k solution from KPP Financial, which helps employees and employers both, especially for those employers that have fiduciary oversight requirements over their 401k that they may not know they have. You have responsibilities. So maybe we can help you with that. We'd love to help you with that. If you'd like to learn more about it, just go to investtalk.com, click on the investment tab, and select 401k solution.
Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial, and we thank you for subscribing. You know what's interesting about our risk analysis tool? People say they've discovered things about themselves they didn't even know. It's a way to put an actual number on your capacity, your personal capacity for risk. You can try it for yourself. It's free right now on investtalk.com.
Time for Invest Talk Personal, everybody, about the day-to-day money decisions that have lasting impact on your life. Scams. Scams that just don't die and won't die. And here's the three most popular scams. Okay, and what they're doing is they focus these scams on the elderly. Because I guess as you get older, you get a little bit more gullible. I guess that's why they do it. I'm not sure why, but I think that's why.
Maybe critical thinking is
less.
Involved in decision making?
Because the first one is grandparent scams. Just think about this. Oftentimes it involves someone calling an elderly person claiming to be his or her grandchild. Now, how can an elderly person not know who their grandchildren are? Normally you would know who they are. So that's what I'm saying. How come it works? And what they do is these people call pretending that they're the grandchild and they say they're in trouble and need money to get out of trouble right away. Well, it's easy to avoid that. If they're your grandchild, call up your son or daughter and tell them that their kid, your grandchild, is in trouble. And then they'll probably inform you.
And have them figure it out.
Yeah. let the parents take care of that problem. IRS phone calls. I've heard several people have this. This is where the IRS calls you. The IRS does not call you, by the way, so you know right away it's fake. IRS calling you. And they're asking for information. They're telling you have problems with your taxes. And they need information. Don't buy into that. The IRS does not call you. The IRS does not email you either. They send you a letter. They will do that. But they don't do it that way. That's not how they get in contact with you. And when they send you a letter, they tell you to call the IRS. Contact the IRS at this number and tell you to get a hold of them. So don't buy into someone to call, I'm from the IRS and you got tax problems. Don't buy it. Don't buy it for a heartbeat. And this is another one, Microsoft Support Center. This involves someone calling you saying your computer has been infected with malware and that the support staff needs to remotely access your computer. Does that make any sense? Do you think Microsoft has people just sitting around calling the millions of clients they have using their software to tell you? That, come on. Don't be gullible. So be very careful. These are
critical thinking, people.
Yeah.
Critical thinking.
Three most popular scams. I just given you the three most popular scams.
Crazy that they all work.
They work. We're not going to let them work, right, everybody? Okay, if you have questions on this topic or any other money matter, please get it through to us at 888-99-CHART. You can also send me a note that will get to me directly. Just click on Contact Steve or John, contact Justin at investtalk.com. Okay, Justin, I had a couple of bear market signals. We talked about one, you said, just earlier. There's a couple of more out there. And everybody, no one knows that we're going to have a bear market. We don't know that. Justin and I don't know that. Nobody knows it. But there's certain things you look for to see if the market's weakening and is it ready for a pullback, those kinds of things. And a couple of things that I read today that may be a bear market signal is one is that the big block buying has dried up. Big block buying usually means mutual funds buying, and it's dried up in the last month or so. Another one is the Dow 30. Have you looked at the transportation index lately? IYT is the ETF for transportation. And you'll notice that it looks like it's lower highs and
lower lows.
Yeah. It's not quite confirmation yet because they're pretty weak at this point. But it's when you start comparing that with the Dow, and then you come up with the Dow theory, and Dow theory means, you know, that we're not there yet, but the Dow is kind of doing the same thing. And that is a possible weak signal that we are heading into a bear market. But we're not there, everybody. We're not there. I don't mean to frighten anybody. But there's certain signals out there that it's kind of telling us that the market is weakening. Another one is on bull market moves are less strong than bear market moves here in this last month.
Yeah, and so far in the month of January, you've had 11 down days and 7 up days.
Yeah, see?
And overall, unless, like we said before, the market rallies dramatically over the next 2 days, you're going to have a down January, which is a good indication that you could have a decent chance of having a down year.
Before we close, remember our wealth conference. You got to sign up. February 7th, go to investtalk.com. The upside of lower oil prices. I'm portfolio manager Steve Peasley with Justin Klein and for everybody at KPP Financial. We thank you for listening today, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.